Periscope family.
That's not half bad.
That's not bad. You're good at this. You're gifted.
Yeah.
Hey, I know how to frame a shot.
He was in the right place at the right time.
All right, everyone get in.
I taught Lee Harvey Oswald everything he knows.
Is it too soon?
Wait, what? Wow. That was bad. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger. NHL playoffs are well underway, and things are getting a little weird.
This could go so many directions.
Yeah, but before we get into all of that, the GM of the Year award came out yesterday.
The nominees, right.
If it came out yesterday, that'd be a whole different can of worms.
And
minor can of worms.
So the three nominees are Pierre Dorion from the Ottawa Senators, Peter Chiarelli from the Edmonton Oilers, and Dave Poyle from the Nashville Predators. Is this a good list?
It's like 2/3, maybe, of a good list. Should I just kick this off? Like cool that Peter Chiarelli was there to draft a generational talent. Like, well done. Like, if that's the GM of the Year award, then cool.
Okay, so actually, before we get into Chiarelli, let's talk about the other two.
Yeah, let's say something positive first.
Yeah. So the Dorion one is interesting
because was it at the beginning of this season that Murray stepped aside? Right, wasn't he the GM?
Well, it was like last summer.
Oh, was it this past summer?
I think so, yeah. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. But that doesn't really matter, because if you just look at what... Because this is for this season.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the work he did this season, bringing in Guy Boucher as the head coach, and...
Which was kind of questionable until the end of the year.
And then trading Mika Zibanejad for Derek Brassard.
Mm.
And, I mean, I guess they traded for FNUF last season.
Last season,
but, yeah. I mean...
Don't forget Alex Burrows.
Yeah, and then they made a couple of trade deadline moves, which actually panned out pretty well. I don't know about this one. Okay, let's look at it another way. Instead of just judging these picks, who should have been picked? So if I were to ask you right now, what would your list be? What would be the three names you'd come up with?
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot.
I'll give you a couple names. I think David Poyle definitely belongs in there. So he'd be on my list. I think a guy, it's interesting because I don't really know how you judge GM of the Year, like what it's truly based on.
Like, because in Ottawa, it seems more like, you know, the success they had throughout the season.
It's more about who defied expectations than anything. But the one I would really look at is Steve Yzerman, because I think that although Tampa Bay didn't make the playoffs, I think almost every move he's made has been perfect.
Yeah.
Like, he's found a way to get out of some sticky expansion draft scenarios. He's gotten value for guys like Ben Bishop. I don't know. I just feel like he's one of the very very best GMs in the league, and I think everything he did put his team kind of on the right path.
And
the problem is that didn't really materialize this season, so that's probably why he's not on the list.
Yeah, and I think going back to the point you made before where it's more of it lands more on the team success than on what the moves the general manager actually made.
Well, that's the thing.
They should be directly linked.
Because you look at the three candidates, Chiarelli, Poyle, and Dorion, and they all have superstars on their team.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you take Erik Karlsson and Connor McDavid off the Senators and the Oilers, does it matter what... those two GMs have done?
Right.
And I know it's not a really fair question, but those teams aren't a whole lot without those two guys.
Mm.
So I don't know. Let's see. Another guy that I can think of off the top of my head, I think Stan Bowman should always be in there.
Yeah. I was thinking literally the same thing. Like, just GM, other GM, coming up with other GMs.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Stan Bowman is always in the forefront of my mind because, just based because of the salary cap, the Chicago Blackhawks should not be as competitive, at least during the regular season, as they have been, particularly this year. But, you know, they've gotten, obviously, their top players locked up, have been, you know, their superstars. And then they've he manages to fail out a roster year in and year out with, you know, losing, like, his, you know, at least four players every year.
True. So, look at it this way, going back to Chiarelli. What about, I mean, what makes him such a better GM than Brad Treliving?
Yeah. Or...
Because look at the contract they gave Goudreau. That was a really good contract. Mm. And they've put together a nice roster. I just... Anyway, I don't want to go all in on Chiarelli yet. Let's try to come up with some other names.
I have a name. Lou Lamoriello.
Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But could he ever possibly win it because of the structure they have in that management group? With Brendan Shanahan being the president of hockey operations?
I mean, it's a point worth noting, but I'm not going to, like, hold it against him.
Right.
Because, I mean, look, they addressed the goaltending, which they needed to do. Mm-hmm. I think bringing in Anderson was great.
Yeah.
They drafted Matthews, which wasn't really hard to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel kind of weird putting his name out there and then berating Chiarelli.
Yeah.
That pick, but... Because it's not totally dissimilar, mm-hmm. but I just think he did a little more.
You know, no matter who's pulling the strings in Toronto when it comes to roster management, the big thing that I took away from this year was how many rookies that the Maple Leafs had, mm-hmm. and then, you know, how far they went. And, you know, mm-hmm. with the exception of, you know, mostly their defense, they looked really good. Like, they looked scary good.
They gave the Capitals a run for their money.
Yeah.
And they brought in that veteran presence, Brian Boyle, that they wanted. So,
like, they made
someone to lead or grit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
as far as gritty forwards, like, you could do a lot. Like,
he's a very good fourth line player.
Yeah. Like, he can actually play a little bit.
But, you know, they put together a very good team this year. Like, you know, obviously, you know, previous drafts, but, like, with all the rookies in the lineup this year, like this team was very much, you know, a product of things they've done in this offseason, in development and whatnot. Mm. And, you know, they got a lot of success out of it, more than anyone else saw.
But I think how much of that is really the GM, though? Because you look at the team that they have, and most of the guys are from the previous regime.
Mm.
And I think in that case... And this is what's really interesting with the GM of the Year award is that sometimes it feels like we're not rewarding teams for not making moves. So the Leafs, for example, you know, how many times have we heard that they were going to trade or that they could have traded Kadri or Van Riemsdyk or Riley or, you know, like it feels like everyone that's ever played for the Leafs in the past 3 years could have been traded at some point. And they kept a lot of guys who have been unpopular.
Yeah.
So,
and to that point, what about Jim Rutherford? Keeping Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, but, and that's another thing. Rutherford had also put together a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Phil Kessel, I mean, that's last year, but...
But still.
And it looked like, you know, going out getting Hainsey, you know, it looked like, you know, they, you know, bolstered, you know, mm-hmm. their defense, and, you know, there's just, you know, they got gobsmacked by injuries, and still getting smacked by injuries.
Yeah.
Well... That being said, those are the GMs that stood out this year. But it's kind of hard to not talk about those guys and basically just make a list of who the best ones are anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's the best GM in the league right now?
Like Bowman.
Let's say the three best GMs. Because I don't think there's really a number one. I think it's more like tiers. For me, I'd go Stan Bowman has to be up there. Steve Yzerman. Poile is up there.
And I would have Poile winning it this year.
Ken Holland? No. Anyone?
crickets.
I don't know how to feel about Bob Murray in Anaheim. Because on one hand...
If you asked me like 2 years ago, like two off seasons ago, mm-hmm. I would have said, yeah, he's one of the best. Like
I mean, he's won the award.
Yeah, he gets great value out of, you know, all of his moves. Mm-hmm. But like recently, it's not only has it been unremarkable, it's been... bad.
Unremarkable.
Well, the funny thing
like it's the complete opposite. He's getting bad value out of it.
The funny thing is that everyone praised him for getting Rickard Rakell signed at such great value, mm-hmm. but he put himself in a position where he had to do that. Like
right.
he he spent $900,000 on Jared Bull.
Yeah, and RFAs have like zero leverage.
Yeah.
So, but that being said, he did get Hampus Lindholm at, you know, $5.25 million, and he got Raquel at I think 3.5.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Those are, and that's kind of what I want to get at with Murray, is that although I think he had a bad summer last summer, but look at their roster. Like, it's half of it is homegrown.
Mm.
Like, their entire blue line was drafted by them. Gibson drafted by Anaheim. Mm. Then, you know, some of the main forwards like Getzlaff, Perry. I mean, he didn't draft them, but they're homegrown as well.
Right.
Although you can't really give them too much credit for that, because those guys would have been great wherever they would have played.
Mm.
But then, you know, you look at sort of this other wave of forwards this year, like Andre Kasha and Nick Ritchie, Ricard Raquel being one of them that's, you know, really come on. And these are all homegrown guys. Like, Anaheim is, to me, as far as signing and trades go, they have kind of a bit of a checkered history.
Mm.
But they develop incredibly well.
Oh, yeah,
and they draft very well. So, I mean, I'd put Bob Murray ahead of Pierre Dorion just for that. I think Bob Murray's, although he has had bizarre moments, I think as a whole, I throw him in the bin of like good GMs.
Yeah, and
he's better than Marc Bergevin.
Yeah,
so.
yeah, he is. Yeah,
like, where do you put Marc Bergevin actually?
Like bottom five.
Yeah,
really?
Recently, yeah. Maybe again, like, you know, 3 years ago, you know, maybe top 15, but like more towards 15.
What's bizarre is that so every GM in the NHL has these blind spots, mm-hmm. where like they're just every team has. Yeah, exactly. So every team has things that they're just bad at evaluating. I think that one team, like for example, the Tampa Bay Lightning, consistently have a great group of forwards. It seems like anyone who comes up from, I think, Syracuse is just automatically good. I mean, this year was like Braden Point, who just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But look at their blue line. Outside of Strahlman and Hedman, like, can you even name their blue line? I mean, like, they signed guys like Jason Garrison, you know, Andre Schuster still gets, you know, minutes, even though he's not very good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's playing over Nesterov, who...
Yeah.
I'm not sold on him yet, but he's, you know, decent player. So it's interesting how, like, even the best of the best have these sort of blind spots. It's
kind of like how Philadelphia has a blind spot with goaltending. I don't know what the reaction is all about.
I like Steve Mason.
Oh, that.
That wasn't even me, like ragging on you.
The old argument.
Even though I think he's, like, completely average at best.
But what about, what's his name? What does it mean? Yarmo Kekalainen, yeah. I mean, what about the job he did in Columbus?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that he's been, you know, spotless.
Yeah.
But he's put together a competitive roster.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, I don't really get these kind of awards. Okay, so who do you think wins it out of those three?
It has to be Poyle.
I would give it to Poyle, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was Chiarelli, and I hate it. Yeah. I hate it.
So the reason why I personally oppose Chiarelli being up there is because I think he has very little to do with that team's success. I think that you look at that roster as a whole, and what has he actually done? You know, like, I mean, sure, he brought in Adam Larson, who...
Mm. Yeah, but he threw away Taylor Hall.
Yeah, like, I just think... A lot of stuff that's there isn't really his doing, and I don't know. I don't really see him as... I just think a lot of it is because he just has so much respect for having won a cup in Boston, even though he traded to Tyler Seguin.
I think, and
Phil Kessel.
Yeah. God, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think that Todd McClellan has a lot more to do with their success than Chiarelli does, and then Connor McDavid has even more to do with it than both of them combined.
But. Yeah, that's what's interesting with Ottawa and Edmonton, is that I feel like a lot of their success is the coaching.
And Chiarelli wasn't there to bring in Cam Talbot, correct? That was previous GM?
I think it might have been him,
It might have been Chiarelli? Okay.
But I don't know, but it's like, yeah, it's a good move, but like, what are we talking about, you know?
Bringing in good goaltending?
Yeah, but he was a backup. You know, all I'm saying is they took a risk on him. It worked out. They took a risk on Adam Larson being, like, a top-pairing defenseman, and it sort of worked out.
Mm.
I mean, they lost to the Ducks. And you look up and down that roster, and he spent, like, an inordinate amount of money on Milan Lucic, who's bad.
And he brought in Patrick Maroon, who...
did things. I don't know.
Scored like 27 goals.
I mean, undeniably, the Oilers are, I think they're a good team.
Mm.
Yes. Right? Can we agree?
We can finally agree. Like
they're a good team.
We'll just say it at this point. They're a good team.
Their roster as a whole, as it is right now, is begrudgingly good.
They're good, but it's just like, it doesn't feel like it's the product of a very, you know, sort of well thought out construction. They had a plan, and it just doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And
if the Oilers at any point had a plan, that would have happened when they were drafting Taylor Hall and Eberle and Nugent Hopkins.
And now they're going to trade Eberle for like 4 cents on the dollar, and they're going to regret it.
Yeah.
If they trade Eberle, I think that's a huge mistake, because they already rely a ton on Connor McDavid. And if they lose him, a guy like Eberle, who had a down year but is a career, you know, at least pretty good shooter, I think his shooting percentage like dipped in half this year. If they lose him, they're going to be even more reliant on Connor McDavid. So. Yeah,
because like
I don't know, like, which you know you can get away with, but that's like,
but like if you look at you know the other previous generational talent in Sidney Crosby, well,
is he dead?
Whatever.
Whoa.
Crosby never had to be the guy. I mean, you know, he's definitely more than capable of being the guy, but he's always had Malkin there with him, a generation talent in his own right. Well, when they alternate being healthy.
Yeah.
But like, and now, you know, with Kessel, you know, it's like, you know, if Crosby has an off night, I mean, yeah, sometimes you hear about, you know, maybe or the Penguins are, you know, in like a 3-game slump and Crosby doesn't have any points. Yeah, fine. But it's not because just because Crosby isn't producing, it's because the whole team is wrong. You know, so if they don't have to rely on him, Crosby doesn't have to be the best because they have Malkin and Kessel. They have like Olympic caliber talent that they can spread out throughout the lineup. With Connor McDavid, you don't necessarily want the whole your whole team's success riding on one player on any given night.
The one thing I'll give Charlie credit for is drafting Leon Draisaitl.
Yes.
Because I think that was kind of a gamble at the time.
I know Aaron Ekblad is a very good defenseman, but
we'll see.
How did two guys go ahead of Leon Draisaitl?
I don't know, really.
How?
Well, who was the first overall pick that year?
Ekblad.
No, he was second.
No.
Well, then who was second?
I don't remember.
Was it Colorado? Someone from Colorado?
Do you want to keep talking while I...
Our in-studio statistician is on the job.
Yeah, the one that's not...
Wait, can I guess this?
Yeah, I wish you would.
Yeah, you can start guessing now. We don't know yet, but you can start guessing.
Why am I
forgetting this?
What year was that?
It's 2014? 2013?
2014 NHL.
God, this is killing me.
Yeah, what's your guess though?
So, no, I think Ekblad might have been second.
No, he was not.
No, dude.
Aaron Ekblad was okay. Just, oh, dude.
Is it Nathan MacKinnon?
Number one. Hold on. Let's see. Drafts by round. Where is it? Keep talking, boys. Draft.
I'm gonna be pretty upset. No, and I don't think Draisaitl was not third.
Dude, stop. Dude,
he was like fifth.
You're making yourself look so stupid right now.
Okay, what is it?
In 2014.
Okay, so I had the year right.
Congratulations.
Yes. Aaron Ekblad was drafted first overall.
Ah.
Okay, I got that right. Do you want to know who was drafted second?
Shit.
You're going to kick yourself.
No.
I think you and I might have even talked about this the other day.
Yeah, we did. That's why I'm mad at myself right now.
Yeah, because you know who it is.
Hold on.
Oh my god.
Is it Barkov? No. Why would it be Barkov? That's a horrible guess.
Idiot. God. Idiot.
Man. Okay, well, we have to move on, so just tell me.
It was Sam Reinhart.
Oh, that's right.
Third overall.
That's why I can't remember, because Sam Reinhart hasn't done shit in the NHL yet.
Exactly. Especially compared to the third overall pick, Leon Draisaitl.
Okay. Okay.
So. We got over that hurdle.
But we'll see with Sam Reinhart. We'll see.
We'll see.
By the way, BT Dubs. The Winter Classic next year.
That's gonna be
wow. Cool. We're in the conference final. We've talked about the GM of the year and the Winter Classic. Okay,
we only go for the hard hitting stuff.
Yeah.
Rangers and Sabres. Is anyone gonna watch?
I mean, yeah. If I'm home.
What if the Sabres are good next year?
I hope so. The league is bad when they're good.
I mean, if they address their defense, they should be.
Yeah, I don't know.
If Jack Eichel doesn't get hurt again.
Where are they picking this year?
I don't remember. That's a good question.
Anyway, I think they're definitely in the lottery.
It's a high pick.
Yeah.
It's a high pick.
We'll see. So you guys, I'm guessing you want to talk about playoffs since we're...
Yes, please.
We're talking about the 2014 draft.
Yeah. This is what it's come to.
Okay, so Ducks, Preds. I'm going to say this before I say anything about specifically each series. I think both of these series have been kind of boring.
They've been low scoring, that's for sure.
Well, no, I just feel like the second round was so good.
It was.
That this round has been a bit of a letdown. And
we're only three games in. It's a long way to game seven.
Yeah. Well, do you think both series are going seven?
I think there's a possibility, yeah.
Okay, so let's just talk Preds Ducks. It's 2-1 Predators right now. We're recording on a Wednesday night. Is it Wednesday?
It is hump day.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
That wasn't necessary.
What?
Hey,
you're so upset.
Water cooler talk.
Yeah, locker room talk. We're in a locker room.
Our locker room garage. I've never...
The Ducks look awful.
I never thought that you could be rattled by hump day.
The Ducks look awful in the series.
They don't...
Any objection to that statement?
No.
Okay, they looked awful in Game 3. The game that they won, where they came back, they still weren't really playing all that well.
Mm.
The only thing that's kind of saving them is that Pekka Rinne kind of looks... Well, I mean, he only allowed one goal yesterday, but
yeah.
He hasn't looked quite as good.
He also didn't face that many shots.
Yeah, like, Nashville has been wildly out shooting Anaheim.
Yeah.
I just, the Ducks seem a little flat to me.
But they're always kind of flat, at least in the beginning.
Well, I just think with the Oilers series, part of it was they were playing a team that hasn't really, you know, had much playoff experience.
And, like, Anaheim they didn't really have to do anything complicated with Edmonton.
Well,
they didn't have to solve some defensive conundrum.
Well, the thing is Edmonton is far less structured defensively than Nashville is, but also just, I mean, it feels like that series was so emotional, you know, like there were the comebacks, there was a game seven, and like the emotions were so up and down, especially with the game six. I mean, you go from that crazy comeback in game five to getting blown out in game six to finally winning a game seven on home ice for the first time in 4 years. It just felt like that was such an emotional series that now it feels like there's a bit of a letdown. Also, I think like a lot of guys are hurt. I think Ryan Kessler could be hurt.
Maybe.
Probably.
I mean, they've got to be worn out already.
And he and Johansson, no matter who comes out of the series, are both going to beat each other up.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think of the Johansson comments?
I thought it was really thin-skinned.
I mean,
I thought it was so soft.
He just sounded like a baby.
I think it did prove that Kessler is, at least in his head, somewhat.
Ryan Kessler is living rent-free in Ryan Johansson's head.
There's also the possibility, I think it's not quite as, it's not as big of a possibility as, you know, just Kessler living in his head. But there's also the possibility that, you know, he's trying to get calls later on. He's just trying to put the spotlight on the two of them.
Oh yeah, that's part of it.
But you know, the thing is, you know, Johansson has to not take stupid penalties now the spotlight's on them, and they're still doing stupid things.
And he has to know that Kessler loves that response.
Yeah,
he has to know that Kessler gets off on the fact that he hates everything that's going on right now.
It doesn't matter to Ryan Kessler because they aren't and will never be friends. According to Ryan Kessler.
I saw one person say on Twitter that they wish more star players would speak out against this type of play. And
were you that person on Twitter?
No.
Oh, no, you were talking about personality.
Well, the way Ryan Kessler plays, I've never liked, personally.
Same.
Because I do agree with the idea that it's not really hockey.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not really... Like, if your sole purpose on the ice is to prevent another person from playing. Look, I'm not saying that like it's a wrong thing to do. I just think it's not fun.
Prevent as in like your goal is to shut them down.
All he does is shadow.
Yeah.
And it's just like, does that really require skill? Like, how much skill do you really need to play that kind of game?
I mean,
any schmuck could do that.
You just need really be a good skater,
yeah,
that's
need
all.
To skate.
But
and you kind of just have to have a screw loose.
my problem with the way they're playing, like, you know, it's, I don't think it's down to star. Maybe it would certainly help if star players spoke up and, you know, spoke out against that kind of hockey. But like it ultimately it comes down to the league office and the refs. You know, they let all this crap go. Like
well, there's no rule against it. So
yeah, there is hooking, holding, cross checking. Yeah, there's a whole book full of rules.
Oh yeah, I just mean like shadowing in general.
Oh, shadowing, yeah. But like the way that these two players are specifically playing, you know, like, you know, boarding each other, roughing each other, and by roughing I mean like no one has a puck, and then like one guy will do like a flyby and just knock the other guy on his ass, tripping, hooking, holding, headbutting.
I mean, this has always been in the game, you know.
Yeah, but like,
For every star player there's ever been.
But what's it adding to the game? Like, I realize that.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I mean,
and I'm speaking from an entertainment value, not.
No, there's value. There's no entertainment to it.
Yeah, it's not even fun to talk about.
No,
like, it's.
No, I'm enraged.
I get why they do it on the ice, because, you know, Ryan Kessler's in Johansson's head, so he might get off his game. But also, you know, you have guys, you know, hitting each other, you know, away from the play or well after the play, and, you know, it creates, you know, it might create a moment's indecision later on, which opens up room, which leads to an opportunity. Right. And the whole point of hockey, I mean, obviously scoring more goals than the other team, but, like, what you want to do on the ice to be successful is create time and space for yourself and your teammates.
Yeah.
Like, if you do that, your teams will always be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize that, you know, these little things are designed to do that or get someone else off their game, both, you know, to, you know, create room.
Mm-hmm.
But from a spectator standpoint, it's not really, it's not entertaining. At least I don't find it entertaining.
It's not. And I just,
like, I like hard hits, but like legal hits and hits that are like actually separating guys from the puck.
I do think that like the kind of pest character is a common theme in all of like professional sports.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like in every sport, for every, you know, superstar, you have the guy who's tasked with stopping him.
Yeah.
You know, like if you remember, like in the 2015 NBA Finals, there was Stephen Curry having this historic season, and then you have Matthew Dellavedova, who this like kind of just schmuck off the street.
Yeah.
I've said schmuck twice. That's three times.
We're breaking records.
But, you know, just some clearly unskilled player trying to stop him. It's all like this narrative isn't unique to hockey, but to your point, like what is it really adding to the game? Like, you know, when someone goes home after going to a hockey game or watching it on TV, what are they going to talk about? Oh, you know, are they really going to go home saying, oh man, you know, when Kessler cross-checked Johansson three times in the head behind the play, like, man, that really was like the moment of the game for me.
That was so much more fun than watching like a skilled player like put the puck in the net.
It's like when we were talking about when there was this whole debate, which is crazy to think it was a debate, about whether to get rid of the touch icing or not. And it's like, oh, like, it's like, who would ever go home and say, yeah, that race for the puck on the icing, like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that really...
I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
That really, like, tickled my fancy.
Hump day.
Well worth the price of an admission.
I just think with Ryan Kessler, like, what I hate about this whole strategy especially is that, why are you trying so hard to shut down Ryan Johansson? Like, he's a good player, but, like...
But, like, Nashville's defense is what drives their success.
What are you really accomplishing just trying to get in this guy's head?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, with Connor McDavid, I get it to a degree. I just think what I don't like about that strategy is that, first off, Ryan Kessler's getting paid almost $7 million a year.
Mm.
If this is what he is, if this is what $7 million gets you, non-hockey skills, like, just chirping a guy behind the play, it just, like... What are we talking about here?
Well, and speaking to your earlier point of, you know, a non-skilled guy, you know, like anyone can shut down, you know, the top forward getting their head
for so long.
Yeah, for so long. Like there are sort of two aspects to that. One, you don't see in a potential Stanley Cup matchup, you wouldn't see Connor McDavid shutting down Sidney Crosby, or vice versa, because. Like, yeah, for, you know, offensive players, like forwards, are obviously they're very skilled offensively, but not necessarily skilled defensively. Like, how many times do you see, oh my God, and there's a forward, you know, defending a 2-on-1, this is not going to end well. You know, and, you know, most of the time doesn't, you know, because they don't exactly know what they're doing defensively. And so, like, one, you don't want to take away the offensive aspect of your best forward to shut down the other forward. And yeah, yeah, it's a interesting matchup on paper. Like, it's like putting, you know, two playing cards together. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, look at these two. What if they had a matchup together? Yeah. You know, it's just interesting on paper, and that's it. But like in practice, it'll only detract from the game. And two, with the reason why you get like not as skilled players, like third liners, shutting down like top line centers, you know, it's because one, they are a little bit more responsible defensively because they're not relied on to
it's not that they're more responsible defensively, it's that they're less good offensively. They just have,
yeah, so they have to focus more defensively
because that's their only that's their only way they can stay in the game.
And like, it's not going to detract from what anything else they do because they don't do anything else.
Exactly. But I think the larger question in regards to Ryan Kesler is, if this is what he is now, this does not bode well. I think he's dealing with an injury personally. He could be. But he has 5 goals in his last 38 games.
And at this point in the season, everyone's dealing with injuries.
Yeah, I agree. Like, that's certainly not, like, just because the guy's struggling, you know, I agree.
Yeah, like, what would happen if they said, like, don't worry about the matchups or, like, being defensive? Like, what if they just turned him loose offensively? Like, what would be the big, like, do you think he would be, like, a big contributor? Or?
Well, I don't even think he's capable of it anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Like, when I watch Ryan Kesler now, I think the first year he was in Anaheim, I was pretty impressed with him. I thought, like, he's really good at controlling the puck and this and that. But, like, last game, he got, like, his line got shelled by the Johansson line. So
yeah, so how well is this working?
That's the thing, is, like, if you're not trying to push the pace on your own terms and you're just reacting, I just feel like you're bound to lose.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he gobbles up some heavy minutes, too. So they're kind of wasting those minutes. I mean, look at it this way. If his entire purpose is just to be joined at the hip with Ryan Johansson, and that basically turns into 4-on-4, like, is that really a trade-off that is worth taking?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man. Going back to the star players speaking out, I'm not against them speaking out about it, because I agree that it's, like, look,
like, in the way that Johansson did?
Mario Lemieux retired, basically, because of this stuff. Like, that's how sick of it he was. I mean, the rules were different back then, but I do agree that, like, the game shouldn't be like this. This isn't in the spirit of the game. But as a competitor in a tightly contested series, you probably don't want to say that, because you're just tipping your cap to the opponent, basically.
Mm. And I think, so, really, the only way it's going to change is, you know, if they actually start calling penalties, like, actually, like, call the rule book the way it's written.
Yeah.
But
the refs can't see everything.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the problem. And you won't get players playing, you won't get them changing just by themselves. Like, you won't get, you know, 20-on-20 Pavel Datsyuk's out there, like, just, you know, having a Lady Bing game. Like, that's never going to happen.
That's not going to happen. And I don't think that's what anyone wants.
You see, everyone in this league is ultra competitive. You know, they're very good, they're ultra competitive, and they're playing for the top prize in hockey, the Stanley Cup. And, you know, it's, of course, if someone has the opportunity to gain an advantage and, you know, not get called, even if it's, you know, not anything dirty, you know, just, you know, hooking or slashing, tripping, you know, something that muddies up the game, that, you know, prevents the skill from shining through, you know, like, they're going to take it. Like, they have to take it. Like, if you're serious about winning a Stanley Cup, you're going to do everything in your power that you can get away with.
Yeah.
To win the cup. You're never going to see any different.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think Ryan Kesler is a bad person for doing all of this, because it's like you're saying, this is kind of like the logical thing to do if you're him. It's just, I don't know, I don't find it that entertaining. The series as a whole, I think the Predators look like the more organized team. The Ducks just feel really disjointed. That's kind of how they felt against Edmonton as well. But now it's kind of unraveling, because the Predators are just a better team than the Oilers were.
Yeah, I know it's a different coaching staff, but it's interesting how the same forecheck strategy like being aggressive on Anaheim's defense is working again. Almost like nothing was learned.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem, I mean, I don't know, because I feel like the Ducks' defense is capable of beating it, because
I think so too.
Compared to last year, I mean, last year the Ducks had two real pairings, and then they had, you know, a combination of Stoner, Bieksa, or some other guy on the third pairing. Now they have three pairings that are all very mobile.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that like part of the problem is that if you turn all of the Ducks defensemen into glass trippers, or you just force them to not make the play that they want, the Ducks forwards don't really come back all that much,
right?
Because they're expecting the blue liners to get it out.
Yeah.
So,
and that might be the adjustment that they have to make.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think the series is, I don't think it's over.
Oh no.
Because the thing with the Ducks is that we've learned is as bad as they look some games, they can look incredible other games.
And
so we'll see.
I think the game we were watching, the game,
I still think it goes seven games
with our friend Sean, and the game they won.
Yeah.
The Ducks won.
Yeah, the Ducks won. And they got behind the eight ball pretty quickly. They were down two goals really quick. And, you know, they just, you know, they were flat in the first period, and they came out flying in the second period, and, you know, they took care of business in the third period.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were saying that it seems like all the other teams in the league, you hear from every coach, we want to come out, we want to dictate the pace of play, we want to make them play our game. Like, we want to control the whole game.
Yeah, the Ducks never do that.
Yeah, the Ducks, it seems like all the time, they sit back and they see how their opponent is playing, and then they play that game. And then oftentimes, when you see the success you see in the second and third period is because they end up playing that game better.
Yeah.
So, like, it's weird because, like I said, every other coach will, like, they'll say, no, don't do that at all. Mm-hmm. But the Ducks, they have success doing it. It's perplexing.
I think the Ducks are fully capable of coming back and winning.
Mm.
Although they look so flat right now, they've looked flatter.
Yeah.
So, and have won series. It's funny because I was so gung-ho on the Predators all season, and I still am. I still think they're a great team. But looking at how they play and looking at their roster on paper, when I was comparing the two teams before the series, I mean, the Ducks are just as good on paper.
Yeah, I mean, I started to...
If not even better. I mean, whose forward group would you rather have? The Ducks or the Preds? Because I think with the Preds, what's interesting is that for all the praise that they get for their top line, I mean, they're rolling Cody McLeod out there every night, know, which is funny because the Ducks are the ones that get criticized for playing Jared Bull. Mm. And they're only playing him because of injury, by the way. But I think a healthy Ducks forward group, I think, is better than the Preds.
I think on paper the Preds are slightly better, but
with the way that and they're missing Kevin Fiala, which is big.
Yeah. But you know, the Ducks are missing Patrick Eves.
So it kind of cancels out.
But with the way that Getzlaff has been playing this entire playoffs,
yeah,
like it sort of evens it out. It closes the gap.
Yeah, he'd
like the gap wasn't that wide in the first place.
He'd be Nashville's best forward.
Yeah, he would.
I don't think that's a controversial statement.
I started to feel better about the Ducks when I looked at it in that light, looking at their forwards. I think that in the playoffs, their forwards have just been more consistently a part of the offense, if you want to say, because so much of Nashville's offense has come from the defense, and the Ducks have gotten a lot of contributions from their forwards. But then all of a sudden, James Neal starts scoring goals, like, out of nowhere. So...
Yeah. I don't know.
It's a close series.
It feels like
it's headed to seven games.
It feels like it's going to be seven games. Yeah. And you know what's been frustrating about these playoffs, and maybe this is just me being salty about the Capitals losing, is that I feel like it doesn't feel like there's a great team in these four teams outside of maybe Pittsburgh.
Yeah. But it's hard to say Pittsburgh too, because
they just lost 5-1 to Ottawa tonight.
But also how decimated they are with injuries.
Yeah. Yeah,
like and you know, those injuries. That was a huge reason why Ottawa won so huge today. You know, because like all of Ottawa's goals, maybe not all of them, but most of them, you got some even just a little bit. That's what I'm talking about. Time and space. You know, it only takes a little bit, but some defensive lapses. You know,
they had some shoddy coverage, like Mark Streit. Definitely missed in the
summer. Who hasn't played in the playoffs?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? And probably himself isn't even 100%.
I mean, I think the Penguins are just. I don't know if they're very well suited to play against the Senators in some ways, because the Senators are so adept at slowing everything down.
They control the puck. They control the pace of play.
And the Penguins are masters of capitalizing on chaos.
Yeah.
Like when things are scrambling and broken, the Penguins will make you pay like every single time. And that's why they came off to such a hot start against Washington. And then once Washington kind of figured out, okay, if we can just limit these odd man breaks, we're going to give ourselves a chance. And then you saw them rattle off those wins before eventually losing in game seven. But
and again, yeah, you know, the two goals off of scrambly broken plays, pucks that should have gotten out that didn't, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, for the Penguins, they're going to have to figure something out. I don't want to talk about the 1-3-1 thing with Ottawa, cause I think it's overblown.
Well, no, it totally is.
Because a lot of teams use that anyway. Okay, this is not unique to the Senators.
To Guy Boucher.
And not in the game that was played today where Pittsburgh lost, but the previous game. So that was game, what, two? The Penguins, for all the talk about the 1-3-1, the Penguins dominated with a puck in the offensive zone. The only reason that they didn't score a whole bunch is because once they got there, they cycled it around and they didn't really shoot it that much.
Yeah, I mean, man,
but they were beating it.
Milbury and Roenick have been laying into the Penguins with every opportunity they get.
Yeah, there's like no middle ground with those guys.
It's okay. It counterbalances Pierre.
Oh my God, Pierre! Pierre is too much, man.
Yeah, I can't hang.
Like tonight, he would not. Who would he not shut up about?
I mean, it was someone on
Pittsburgh. He has his favorites. Yeah. You can tell, and anytime they do anything. And everything is because of coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it's always give an assist to Mike Sullivan on that one for creating that matchup. And then he'll like ask him about the matchup later and he'll be like, we're not really worried about the matchup. We're just worried about ourselves.
Yeah, like he's so excited to like anyway, I don't think like Pierre's not a bad guy or anything. It's just he's kind of insufferable.
He's just annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're better than like NBCSN bashing on this podcast.
Yeah, so. We're above that. That's not a thing that we would ever do.
I would say we're better. Well, I say we're better than it, but we're not above it.
Well,
we do it a lot.
We don't do it that much. And actually, I will say, I think NBCSN has been pretty good in these playoffs.
Better than we were last year.
I think that like the commentators that they've used have been good.
Yeah.
I don't know why Mike Johnson didn't make it to round three. I don't know if...
Well, he doesn't call games on NBCSN.
No, he did in round one.
Did he?
Yeah.
But wasn't that like a TSN feed?
No. Or... It was the... which series was it? It was the...
Was it Minnesota?
The Oilers Sharks. He was on that one.
Oh, Joe and I didn't watch the national...
Ah, that's why. Yeah. You local boys.
Yep.
Yeah, he was calling it on NBCSN.
Oh, well.
So I don't know why...
I mean, he probably has more obligations with...
But okay, here's...
Unless you're watching on Periscope, you can't see that. But based on the body language, it's about to get spicy.
Okay, but let me interject first. If you're listening, Mike Johnson, I would love it if you called more Sharks games.
Yes,
I would love it.
I'll say this: I'm going to get on my soapbox and get my trumpet out or whatever. I love Mike Johnson. I think he's a really smart, sharp, well spoken guy.
Yeah, very measured.
I think generally speaking, he's right. Most of the time. But sometimes when I'm watching a hockey game, I don't really want that. Like, I want something... I feel like sometimes he doesn't really allow himself to be entertaining. Like, he's really smart. You watch the games, you're going to learn something, and I totally appreciate that. And generally, like, I'd rather have him calling the game than most people. But I just think sometimes he's a little flat. He's a little dry. And I don't know. Like, I'm not saying I don't want him to be like Pierre McGuire or anything. But I wish he was a little bit more, like, kind of opened up a little bit more.
I hate to bring up a local reference. I suppose it's not local anymore. But, you know, it's part of what I liked about Drew Remenda.
Because he was good at doing both.
Yeah, because he was sort of triple layered. You know, he could break down the game like a coach. Mm-hmm. He could break down the game like a fan. And he also, you know, could be... Not always, but he could be impartial, you know, like, you know, a color guy or like a commentator is supposed to be.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the
mostly supposed to be.
The analytics crowd loves Mike Johnson I mean, you know, rightfully so, he's a smart guy, but like, oh, he talked about shot attempts in the air. That makes him better than everyone else. Like, come on. Come on.
I do love when he like doused Jonathan Quick. I think
I love his takes on like goalies and stuff.
Like in the offseason.
No, the top 10 goalie list that he just like ripped apart.
Yeah. He was NHL Network. He was like, really, Jonathan Quick? Like, he makes all these great saves because he's out of position.
I just wish he was.
Finally, someone said it.
But like, he is like, he's good at what he does, and I don't want him to be something he's not. But like, sometimes I just wish he was a little bit more entertaining. And it's a tough job. I mean. Yeah. Like, we're lucky doing this because we just get to sit around and we sort of prepare what we're going to talk about and it's recorded and we can back and edit. But, like, talking on the air as the game's happening and, like, being, like, that's a tough job.
And he just does, like, when he does games, he just does network coverage, right? He's not actually attached to a team.
No.
Right.
No.
And I think maybe if you saw him attached to a team, maybe you'd get what you'd be asking for.
It'd be more in depth, because that's the other thing that's actually really hard about what he does and what a lot of these guys do, is that, you know, you parachute in to like these teams in the playoffs, and all of a sudden, like, I think for me, what helps me out a lot, you know, writing about the Ducks, is that I watch every single game, keep up with everything that's going on from the first game of the season or even preseason to the very end. So by the end of it, you have this really fleshed out view of like everything on the team. But if you're covering the whole league, like, that's tough. Like, I mean, I feel like you just can't really have a feel for like, you know, what's going on. Cause when I hear some of these national guys, let's say, like, talk about the Ducks, I'm like I find myself kind of like correcting them or like thinking like they're missing some stuff, you know? But I don't begrudge them for it, because it's just tough to jump in and automatically know what's going on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do the same thing when people talk about the Sharks. I do it with myself when I talk about the Sharks, because I have such a...
David Schlemko.
Yeah. Yo, he was great, and some people think he wasn't. Whatever. I don't associate with those people. I don't need them in my life. but, you know, I have a depth of knowledge about the Sharks because I watch them all the time.
Yeah.
And then I listen to myself talk about other teams, and it's not nearly as in depth.
Yeah, because every team is like a storybook.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's so many layers to it, and characters and events and subplots, that it's just, it's tough to just jump in like that.
Yeah, exactly. You can't see everything when you don't watch 82 games.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's impossible.
And even if you watched all 82 of those games, there's the 82 before, and there's the summer before, that all have kind of built up to this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's a story arc.
Yeah, which is why I love. That's why I love sports in general, is because every season feels like an unwritten story, or a story that's being written as you go along. Whereas, you know, like in TV shows or movies, like, it's already written.
Yeah.
So like, it's still, watching a great movie is still a good time, but sports, like, it's happening before your eyes, and that's part of the reason why I just love it.
Yeah, so. I mean, the drama and the storylines, and there's always ups and downs and twists.
And yeah, there's always twists. I mean, look at the Washington Capitals. Like, they should have won a Stanley Cup by now, probably.
Yeah, so let's talk.
But they never have. Oh, so so the caption on our Periscope broadcast tonight was, "We are live talking about if the Capitals should trade Alex Ovechkin," and we have, it's been like,
clickbait, 40 minutes
now?
Yeah, 50. We hook you in with like the big dramatic like headline.
Next and year's Winter Classic.
We make you wait 50 minutes.
So, I mean, look, predictably, since the Capitals bowed out in yet another disappointing fashion, there's been talk that they should maybe trade. They should just blow it all up. Mm. Personally, I think that there's a middle ground to these takes.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, I think there's a crowd of people that are always like, oh, those people with those hot takes are so dumb. How could they possibly think that trading Alex Ovechkin is a good idea? Those people are bad. Like, there is that crowd. Okay. And I'm kind of describing like 90% of hockey Twitter. But I think that, like, you can't just discount the idea of trading a star player just because it's crazy to think or whatever.
Right.
Like, I mean, Alex Ovechkin is 31 or 32. I think he's 31. But he's clearly not the same player he was at 5-on-5. He's still a great goal scorer. A down year for him is 33 goals.
Yeah.
And he was hurt in the playoffs, so that explains why he looks so slow. But if you can, let's say you can trade him for something I don't know what that could possibly be.
A top line all-star, let's put it that way.
An all-star or a young player, draft picks, obviously. But there's so much that goes into these decisions because Alex Ovechkin is arguably, maybe inarguably, the biggest star in Washington sports history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
maybe.
Is it close? I don't know.
I don't. I mean,
Kirk Cousins got to be up there.
Yeah, like Joe Theismann.
So all that to say that he's the biggest star they've ever had. He's a big reason. I mean, that franchise was dying before he got there, and to move him, you're going into uncharted territory because without Alex Ovechkin, I mean he's their biggest star. He sells the most merchandise. He puts people in, you know, he brings people to the arena. Like, yeah. I mean,
like I don't know.
You don't just trade these people for nothing.
Yeah, I don't think if you ask like the casual fan that watches the games, like one, they probably don't remember the Capitals without Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. Two, like if you ask them to name who was, you know, the star before Ovechkin got there, and you know they're not going to know Adam Oates or remember that Jaromir Jagr was on that team.
Yeah, or well, their all-time leading scorer before Ovechkin was Peter Bondra.
Yeah,
Peter
Bondra.
Yeah,
yes.
So he was a great player, but I mean that, you know, yeah, was never like a superstar.
Yeah, I guess it begs the question: what kind of team do they need to build around him if they are to keep him? Which I think they will.
If I'm the Washington Capitals, if I'm is it Brian McClellan, the GM?
Yes.
I run it back because I still think look, they're a great team. They have all the pieces. And they're going to have to do some maneuvering this summer with some of those RFAs. But look, I mean, as long as you have this good of a core that's consistently challenging for the President's Trophy, you got to believe that if you're going to be in that position each time to potentially get there, you got to do it. I mean, let's say that, you know, the Penguins get an injury or the seeding breaks a certain way and you like all they need is a break and they haven't really gotten that.
Yeah.
So why not take another shot at it? I mean, anything could happen in the Eastern Conference. I mean, look, Sidney Crosby gets concussed. What if he missed the rest of that series? Or you know what I mean? Like,
or just, maybe he should be, but whatever.
Anything can happen.
Yeah,
and they're still good enough to do it. I mean, look at fucking Ottawa.
Yeah,
everything broke right for that team.
Yeah,
they
got 2009 Bobby Ryan.
Even Anaheim. I mean, Anaheim had maybe the least impressive sweep of all time in round one, and no one's ever going to remember it. And then they could have very well lost against Edmonton. So if you have that good of a team, you know, hockey's all about probabilities. If you have good odds, you got to just come back to the table each time.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think there's an inherent flaw in this team that's never going to allow them to win a cup.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way.
And like Ovechkin and Backstrom, like type of talents just don't come around that often. Like, you can't tell me that there's not something that can be done to make a team with those two guys a Stanley Cup winner. And they haven't gotten the best from everyone. It is unfortunate that Ovechkin was injured, and Braden Holtby was very up and down.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if he wasn't up and down, and what if Ovechkin was healthy? You know, like, it speaks to your point about good breaks, bad bounces, whatever.
I hate to bring it up.
Uh-oh.
Because it's an old argument, and maybe in the grand scheme of things an irrelevant argument, because we know how valuable Ovechkin is, even in the playoffs, to not only the Capitals, but you know, potentially any team. But like the game 7 they lost, the two goals that got scored, he made some lazy plays.
He did.
And you know, like not only, you know, a couple pucks that should have gotten out, that, you know, with, you know, if, like I said, if it wasn't being quite as lazy, would have. But also, I think it was the first goal where it didn't get out. Yeah, it was first goal. And then, you know, it was his responsibility to pick up the guy who took the puck all the way in front of the point, who was in front of him. And that guy beat him to the front of the net. And Ovechkin, you know, he was close enough to get a stick on him, not close enough to prevent anything. But without knowing exactly how his injury was prohibiting, you know, his movement.
He could have been laboring.
Yeah, he could have been. But, like, the back check itself looked very lazy. And in a game but 7.
At least look like you're trying, maybe.
I hate to bring up the argument, but, you know, it is it is worth questioning because
sure, it, that's the thing.
It does take a certain mindset to not only win Stanley Cup but get over moments like that.
And I totally agree with that. And that's why I think when people bring up the trade Ovechkin thing, they're not like stupid for thinking that.
Yeah,
like it's a fair question to ask.
Yes.
That being said, look at this. Like, you guys should know better than anyone. Look at the San Jose Sharks. How many times could you have said, "Let's blow this thing up"? Many times.
Yeah.
And look at some of the ways they lost. I mean, that goal by Kevin Bieksa in overtime. Like, sometimes bounces just don't go your way.
Like, right. Bieksa was the only one on the ice who knew where the puck was.
And, like, 2009 against the Anaheim Ducks, the Sharks ran into the hottest goalie that I've ever seen in my lifetime, Jonas Hiller.
And then Craig Anderson.
Yeah.
So.
And even again in that Vancouver series, they were so beat up by the series before when they played Detroit. Like, you know, Ryan Clough couldn't even put his jersey on by himself.
Right.
So that team felt like, you know, they had a good chance to win the cup, even, you know, that series, if they had been, you know, even a little bit more healthy.
Yeah. And so you look at, and you look at the Sharks, and they were going to break it up, but they didn't because
they made the finals.
No.
Well, before that.
Before that. The John Scott season.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When they tried to blow it up.
And Thornton and Marleau refused to be traded.
Yeah.
So all I'm trying to say here is that when you have that talented of a nucleus, you just have to trust that it's like buying lottery tickets. Mm. You know, you just have more tickets than other people and you have all that talent. At some point, you have to believe that you're just going to hit.
Yeah.
And I think that the Sharks proved it. You know, I think that the only issue is when they finally got their turn, they faced, I think, the worst possible matchup.
Yeah.
And they were just older.
Yeah.
You know? But look, I mean, I'm not sure there's an argument to be made that they could have won that series, but they were still there.
Right.
And anything can happen. You know, like an injury could have happened. They could have played someone different. So that's why I think when you have a nucleus like that, you just, it's such a hard sell to fans.
Squeeze every...
Like, we're doing this again. But I think truly in hockey, it's really a situation where you just have to keep trying. Whereas in basketball, I mean, if you're not winning the championship, you should basically be tanking.
Yeah.
Because, like, look at the LA Clippers. They've had, like, for the last 5 years, the same nucleus of Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. Every year, it's, who are they going to trade?
Mm.
And they keep trying again, and it's like, you know... Their only real hope is that the Warriors just, like, stop existing.
Right.
Same thing with the Raptors in Cleveland, like LeBron. Anyone in the East, basically you should be making every move in function of when LeBron is retiring.
Mm. Right, yeah.
But in hockey, it's not really like that because you can have these amazing teams. I mean, look, everyone picked Chicago to go all the way this year, and they get swept in the first round. And I expected them to lose, but that being said, like, no one expected them to get swept.
Right.
So... This game is so liable to these sort of bounces and crazy luck that if you have a good team, you just have a little bit better odds, and you should just trust that.
Yeah. Even
it's
if you
so
have,
shitty that it like all comes down to
yeah,
that.
Like, even if, whether you have a good team or like even if you're you know the last seed going into the playoffs, there's still plenty that's up in the air. You know, it's a coin flip. You know, like you know, bounces, injuries. You know, just. Even just hot streaks.
Interpretation of the goaltender interference rule.
Right?
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I agree. If you have a good team, you know, like you said, hockey's not like basketball, you know, where on paper, the teams that are supposed to make the finals usually make the finals.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Final Four in basketball right now. It's the 1 and 2 seeds in both conferences.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, hockey, it very easily could have been. The Edmonton Oilers making it, even though they weren't, you know, the 8th seed, they could have made it to the finals. They were fully capable of doing that this year.
Yeah, and even I don't want to talk about the Habs.
Positive vibes only.
I don't want to get depressed.
Yeah. You do have a beer in front of you.
well, there it goes. I think that's one thing that is very exciting about the Stanley Cup playoffs is that anything can happen. As a pure fan of like success and like sustained success, it's kind of annoying though to see teams like Ottawa just kind of break through out of nowhere and But they've earned it. Like, they, I mean, I'm not saying they don't deserve to be there. It's just I'd rather see like the two best teams in the regular season.
Yeah. And that's how I felt, you know, being a Sharks fan in 2006 when the Oilers went all the way to the finals.
Yeah, that's nuts.
It'll be interesting to see what they do, because it's quite likely that Kevin Shattenkirk and TJ Oshie won't be back.
Yeah.
So whether they want to or not, they're going to have to do some kind of retooling.
Yeah, like Shattenkirk's not going
to
be back.
So back to the Ovechkin thing, though. Let's say... one thing I want to bring up, too, actually about the Ovechkin thing. So I was listening to Merrick versus Pshinsky last week, and what Jeff Merrick was arguing, which I thought was really smart, is that, look, Alex Ovechkin is great, but how many teams in NHL history have we seen where the best player, the franchise player, is a winger? You know, like the transcendent guys who can will their team to a cup are generally all centers.
Yeah, it's centers and defensemen.
And defensemen, yeah. I mean, as a winger, your impact on the game is just more limited.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really control the game. And Ovechkin has never, he's never really been that. Mm-hmm. Like, his true impact on the game is people are afraid of his one-timer, and when he comes down the wing, maybe not anymore, but he used to be, like, unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, but that's the thing. That's such a confined play, though.
Mm.
So it's like, can a team whose best player is a winger win the Stanley Cup? You know, that's
sort of what I was thinking about because, like, going back to what I was saying about maybe potentially Ovechkin's attitude, drive, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
His overall competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Does have not even having him on the wing as your best player on the wing, but like having him on the top line, or like I was saying earlier about how Crosby doesn't have to be the go-to guy because he has Kessel and Malkin and even Letang when he's healthy, or when all of them are healthy. Even though Ovechkin does have Backstrom, I don't see Backstrom even doing things like what Getzlaf is doing, which is completely driving a team.
Well, that's the thing, is that, I mean, Sidney Crosby is... I think it's no longer close. Who's better, Crosby, Sid, or Ovi?
Yeah, like Ovi's the best goal scorer I think that the game has ever seen.
I think he's the best goal scorer of all time, and as a winger, that makes sense because he's well positioned to score. Like you fairly often see the winger being the goal scorer.
Yeah, but like he's not better than Crosby. Like,
and Crosby drags along an entire line.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, and you know, all due respect to Connor Sheary, Pascal Dupuis, Chris Kunitz.
It's a Russ on that.
Brian line. Rust. Sheary.
What was his name in the beginning of his career? Malone.
Ryan.
Ryan Malone.
Sheary, yeah.
I mean, Crosby is just a machine.
Yeah.
And I think that we're learning that more and more. Same thing with Malkin. I mean, maybe that's why the Penguins have had more success.
Well,
like, is that their two best players are two of the greatest centers the game has ever seen.
Barry Melrose, I think, raised the point that...
Oh, man.
If,
you just had to ruin this podcast.
I know.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, guys, a show.
Shout out to Barry.
Let me throw up.
I can't really respect ESPN anymore when it comes to hockey. Because I mean,
not that you did in the first place,
but I mean, like, at least they had respectable writers and stuff. Now it's, well, they still have Craig Custins, but
we can do a whole podcast on that. But he raised the point that if roles were reversed and Crosby played for the Cavs,
they'd be better.
They would be the ones with the cups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Penguins would not if they had Alex Ovechkin.
God, that's so tragic.
Yeah.
I feel like Ovechkin is like one of those, like, he's like Achilles. You know, he's so great, but he just has that flaw that he's just not a center.
Oh, man. Really, since you put it that way, it really makes me go, they should trade him. Like, absolutely. You just swung me.
Ovechkin.
Okay, yeah, I mean, like, what they really, I think what they really need to stick to next season is to put him on the third line and do the Pittsburgh thing where he's just, like, a lethal scorer against weaker competition and it frees up the other two lines.
Mm.
Like, I mean, you put him with Eller and
then just throw him on the power play.
But then aren't they going to match up against that line? So, like, will he really be against
weaker?
But
then you have these other two amazing lines that are going to be freed up, you know, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, don't know what happens with Oshie, but and Justin Williams. So I don't know. I just it feels like they should trade him in some respects. Like, I think the core of what they have definitely keep intact, but like I hate this. I hate this because I'm a sucker for the guy who plays his entire career on one team.
Yep. Yeah.
And rides off into the sunset. I don't like seeing Matt Sundin on the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
I don't like seeing Jerome Iginla on the LA Kings.
Or the Boston Bruins.
Or the Colorado Avalanche.
You know.
Or the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So I'm a fan of the Stevie Yzermans and the Joe Sakics. And I understand that the reality of the NHL now is just vastly different than it used to be.
Mm.
But I want to see Ovechkin. I want to see Ovechkin win a Stanley Cup in Washington. He's already a Hall of Famer. He's already going to have his number retired in Washington. But I just want to see him do it there.
Yeah.
As a fan of the sport, as a fan of hockey history, like if he gets traded to, I don't know, L.A., blockbuster deal, I don't know. Like, I would just be dead inside.
Well, he wouldn't get traded to L.A. because he can't play goalie, so that's a huge problem.
They need an Ovechkin, though.
Oh, they absolutely do. Maybe more than anyone.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. It's kind of depressing.
It's going to be their most interesting offseason.
Okay, so if you had to put a percentage on it, what's the likelihood that he gets traded?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero?
He will not get traded.
Like,
hey, if PK Subban can beat... No, never mind.
I think it's zero, mainly because...
Hey, Gretzky got traded.
But true. That was different. The Oilers shouldn't even have been in the league without Gretzky.
It gets hotter and hotter in
here.
The
Oilers just shouldn't exist.
Well, actually, you know, literally they were not in the league before Gretzky.
Well, they were in the WHA.
Yeah, and then they got Gretzky, and then NHL bought the league.
They bought Gretzky for like a bag of pucks or something.
Yeah. No, they bought the entire league, not just the team, the league.
Okay.
But
besides your like visceral hatred towards Edmonton.
If there was... I just don't think there's a deal to be had out there, even if they were actively trying to shop him.
The salary.
Like, the salary and his age a little bit, and also just, you know, what teams would have to give up.
What if Pittsburgh traded for him?
Oh, my God. Like, you would have to have a team like Pittsburgh that has plenty of offensive talent, but also is looking for, like, that one change. Like, you know, obviously Ovechkin is a big change, but, you know, then what you'd have to give up, it would only be, like, a slight improvement. It'd be more like a, you know, a change of flavor than, like, a dramatic overhaul.
You know a team that could use him? Montreal.
Yeah, they could.
They need...
That would be pretty
awesome.
It's
funny because a few years back when his rookie contract was up, there was, like, just a little murmur that he might go to Montreal, and it didn't happen. But... I mean, if the Habs had Ovi, that would... But see, the thing is, they're still weak at center with him. And then we go back to this, like, idea that, you know...
Hey, maybe if they could teach him to play center, it would teach him some responsibility, and that would get him over the hump.
But if they did have Ovechkin, they would be, like, incredibly more dangerous.
Mm.
So, I don't know. And, like, if you're trading him, you probably have to have the other team retain salary and...
And that's the thing we haven't even talked about is he's making a lot of money.
9.5.
For as great as he is, it's hard to move that contract.
But if Shea Weber can be traded, who's making a gazillion dollars.
Weber for Ovechkin.
Well, now we're just playing NHL 17, like be a GM mode. I'd feel great about that. Okay. I'd much rather have Alex Ovechkin at a gazillion dollars than Shea Weber at a gazillion dollars.
Yeah. And he could play, like, they could put him at the point, like,
yeah,
on the power play. And he would be the big booming shot.
The bottom line is around Ovechkin is it's a conundrum. Like, it
sucks because he feels kind of like a pariah at this point.
Yeah,
like he's really good, but he's kind of limited. You can't really win with him as your centerpiece anymore. Like, the time to win it was when he was like 24 and he was scoring 60 goals a year, and
yeah,
you know. Because now he's still very good, but he's got some limitations, and he kind of kills your flexibility in some ways, and I don't know. This sucks.
Yeah.
This is hurting me.
Yeah. And they do, like, because how much do they move him around, like, on the power play? He's mainly just at the top of that circle all the time,
he,
right?
He flip-flops between the point and, but by flip-flop, I don't mean, like, they set him up at the point. I mean, like, he works basically that wishbone. Both points, yeah. And then, you know, on the left side.
Yeah. What if the Sharks had him?
That'd be dope.
Yeah.
Like, I'm down.
If he was on the Sharks...
I think they could use him.
They would... Because their power play needs it.
Yes.
Badly.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the... You know, the it, I don't know. It's there's holes, like there's positives and yeah. there are negatives about it, you know. And not, I'm not even talking about like potential trades.
It's just we're crazy that we're at this. It's crazy that we're at this point where trading for Alex Ovechkin isn't
like a weird thought.
Or
like,
no, it's not far-fetched. No, that it's not like, okay, now we're gonna win the cup. Now it's like, oh wait,
yeah,
that too.
Really?
Yeah, like we still don't know if we get better.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing.
Yeah, it's actually hurting your heart. It looks like.
Well, you know, I just.
You okay?
It sucks to see great players.
Baby aspirin.
They're gonna, you know, his reputation is just never, unless he wins a Stanley Cup, he will never get the respect. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean,
it's always gonna be that he was a selfish player, he was an individual player that just couldn't get it done. But look, at some point, if you never win the Stanley Cup, and like Joe was saying, you look bad in crucial games, you kind of deserve some of the flack, right? Like he's not without fault.
Right.
It's just, I think what people are kind of like, I don't know if they're blissfully unaware, but it's like, yeah, he's their best player, but in hockey, one guy can only do so much, especially a non-center. So I don't know. Weird.
Yeah. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for Washington.
You guys have to go eat wings.
Yeah. At 10 p.m.
Oh, really? Is it 10?
Yeah. It's 10 p.m.
Oh, my God.
That's okay. They only got there like 20 minutes ago.
It's 10 p.m. It was a great podcast. If you enjoyed the show, if you've been enjoying the show, please, 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 please leave a review on iTunes. We love to hear from you guys, love to hear the constructive criticism or praise, whatever it may be. It's just great to hear from the listeners, and it also helps us move up the rankings, so that's good.
Yes.
Please help. And if, you know, and if that sounds like too much work to you, if you follow the pod on Facebook or Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod, facebook.com/GarageHockeyPod, just hit the share button, hit the retweet button. You know, spread it to your followers and your friends. That would be awesome too. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Yes.